strong! Strong! My armor is like tenfold shields. My teeth are like swords. My claws, spears. The shock of my tail are thunderbolts. My wings are furnaces. And my breath, death. Well, where are your riddles now?
And welcome to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm here on, this would be May 17th, 2013, to introduce this episode of Radio DMG. Well, there was a Nintendo Direct, but there really wasn't that much news in terms of the 3DS, so you can go check that out on the website, dmgice.com, because we have the press release up. And you'll see it in our News City archive for that day. Well, today we're just going to have one musical ration and one interview from Anime Land Wasabi with Legacy Action Comics, and I will see you again after this content. So, hang on tight, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to try and make these a little bit shorter and a little bit easier to digest in the future. So, you're welcome. And, yes, see you in a little bit.
road is cleared, said Galt. We are going back to the world. He raised his hand, and over the desolate earth he traced in space the sign of the dollar.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm over here at Anime Land Wasabi 2013 with
Andrew Mark with Legacy Action Comics.
So, Andrew Mark, who are you? What do you do? What is Legacy Action Comics?
Legacy Action Comics is a creator-owned, self-published book that kind of originated in the Denver area, in the metro area, when we were all in high school. We actually started, I met Ray and Jack in elementary school, Tyler and Nick in junior high school, and we kind of carried our friendship into senior high school, and then we all decided we wanted to make comics, and then we graduated high school. We all went our different ways, went to college, you know, worked our jobs. You know, almost 13 years later, we came back together, and we found that, you know, we still wanted to do comics, and we were still really close friends. So we decided to, you know, throw caution to the wind and do the self-publishing game.
Hmm. So it's kind of, you're kind of a bit like, say, Antarctic Press or other types of indie developers or
Absolutely.
Indie comic developers?
Absolutely.
What titles do you guys develop?
Okay, we have Legacy Action Comics Presents, which is a serialized book where we take five snippets of a story and put that all together in one book. That's going to be exploded out to five of their own independent titles. And then we're going to keep the Legacy Action Comics Presents title as just short story format for, you know, little vignettes that we want to do that don't really fall into any kind of continuity with the rest of the stories. But then we have Inspector Von Ghoul, which everyone loves. It's created by Nick Millara. And he, it's kind of a paranormal investigator story, monsters and magic and that sort of thing. And then we have Goey, which is created by Jack Dudley, and he is a demon hunting priest. We have Silver, it's a 900 pound gorilla that, you know, gets abducted by aliens. So that's always fun when you put a wild animal in a spaceship.
I guess so. So what's the inspiration for a lot of these?
We've just had a really good working relationship with really great writers. And I think that's kind of the we're a bunch of artists that didn't have any path, and then we found a bunch of writers that, you know, like had a bunch of stories that wanted to be told with no artists. So we kind of came together in that fashion. The inspiration is, I mean, it's I always like to say that like 80s action movies, like the like, you don't really need too much of a story as long as you have enough explosions and
enough vibrant art, that type of thing.
Exactly. So I mean, that's what we try to do, is Legacy Action Comics. We're not Legacy, you know, emotional
Comics drama, no Archie and Veronica
right
stuff here.
Exactly.
Oh, okay, yeah,
it's like action, that's
yeah,
the
so
main
action
point
comics. Yes. I noticed something, like your little slogan there is like not approved by the Comics Authority, etc.
Right.
Is there a reason that Legacy Action Comics went with self-publishing other than seeking out another normal publisher like DC or Image or Marvel in that regard?
Well, I think that it's we try to push the creator-owned aspect of it all, and we want to do our own thing. Like we've sat around and talked about it, and none of us have an original voice to Spider-Man or Superman. Like, that's not what we're here for. We want to tell our stories the way we want to tell it, and if we have to use harsh language sometimes, or, you know, graphic storytelling in the aspect of violence or you know, nudity, maybe. We haven't crossed that bridge yet.
Just a little bit.
But
not there yet.
But I mean, that's the thing, is like, we don't want to be beholden to some archaic you know,
Comics Authority code. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's our thing, is who is this authority? Who gave them this authority? And who are you to tell us what we can put in our own books? See, we're storytellers. We're artists. We do what we want to do. You know, if you've got a problem with that, then don't approve us. That's our slogan. You know, like, we do what we want to do.
So What was the since I don't know a lot about Legacy Action Comics at all, actually, it was kind of a blank slate interview here. You said your most popular one is the Von Ghoul.
Yeah, Inspector Von Ghoul.
What was the first one you guys published, and how did it perform to your expectations?
Oh gosh, well the first one we did was in high school, and we actually did the went to the local print shop and printed off a handful of these books. And they were stories that we still play with today. Like the characters, and we matured certainly. So we're evolving the characters as we grow, but an utter failure from a publishing perspective because we were paying exuberant prices at a print shop trying to get this book together, and then I think that kind of tore us down a little bit. And then we grow up, and we mature, and we evolve, and then we figure. And then the technology has come to us. If anybody out there wants to publish their own book or be their own creator-owned book, there's nothing stopping you. So technology has come to the point of come to the creator. It's the job of the creator to go to the technology now. So our first run. Like I said, we did Von Ghoul, we did Silver, we did Goey, we did Where's Wendy, and we did Texas the Kid. And we tried to hit as many genres as we can so that we're enticing as many readers. So we have horror and mystery and sci-fi, western, Silver is a little bit of everything. So
just kind of a conglomeration of stuff.
Right, yes.
With a gorilla.
With a gorilla. You put a gorilla in any situation, and you're going to have a good time.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, with those in mind, what was it like? It sounds kind of a little bit like what they do in Japan with the doujinshi, where you've got groups that come together and they'll self-publish something for the to sell at a convention or on their various websites and such. What is that process like? What is that scheduling like when you're sitting there taking steps to final draft and all that? What's it like? I mean, if you can just give us kind of a brief breakdown of the timeline of that, or how what's the biggest hurdle
the
with
chronology
self-publishing?
Of it?
Yeah, what's the biggest hurdle with self-publishing? What is the biggest hurdle?
The biggest hurdle clearly is marketing. Because I think that's the only thing that stops. I think it's the hardest thing to get over is that you create a product, and I have really diligent, hardworking artists and writers that I have more material than I can print at one time. So my job as the editor is to find the marketing scheme that's going to put us out there. We have so many different avenues. We have Twitter and Facebook and all these things that are free to our disposal, but we're not reaching a wide enough audience, or we're not reaching mainstream, if that's the term.
Well, not reaching enough. There's always that weird thing where when you're starting and trying to market something, it kind of it's hard to market.
Yeah.
Are there any type of suggestions or anything you'd have for people who are going into essentially like SEO or social marketing?
Right.
Any tips on that?
I think you have to be your own champion all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you're pushing a book that you've worked months on, publishing, you spent money publishing it, printing it, you can't ever stop. You can't ever turn off. Every conversation you have has to lead back to your book and how to get it in stores and who you can team up with that is like-minded, that is willing to put their name on your book or vouch for you. These are good guys. I've read this book. It's a really fun book. So you have to have, you can't do it by yourself. You have to have a network of people that are willing to, like your show or other communities, other creators in your neighborhood that are willing to go out on a limb and say, I've read this book and I vouch for it. Put it on their social media, put it on their website, on their blog, and let their buzz carry your book. And in turn, the important thing is that you do the same thing for them. I think a lot of my marketing strategy is to befriend all these people who are doing excellent books and at least on the same quality as Legacy, and you know, get them involved with my book, and hopefully then they'll push it for you. Also, like, as opposed to like most people who do their own writing and drawing and all that, like, I have 5 different creators that are pushing it on their social media, and so like we have a pretty we have a small army of creators that are pushing it for us. So if the best tip I can say is don't ever stop. Don't ever stop talking about your book. Contact your comic book stores, your local bookstores, get them in front of people. That's the most important thing, because like you may have this really great book, but until you turn into the salesman, you got to take off your artist or writer hat and put on the salesman hat. And you know, and I know it's a very aggravating thing. It's very stressful to go out and be like, "This is my book. Do you want to carry it?" Or, you know, like that. And it's very. I've done that a bunch of times where like you walk into a store, you don't know anybody, you have no friendly faces, but. You know, you have to ask them for a favor. Will you carry my book? You know, and sometimes you got to take a little bit of a price break on that too. So, like my as far as marketing goes, don't ever shut off. Don't ever turn off. You know, like my book, and like if you're going to sell your book, if you intend on selling your book, be on it all the time.
So essentially, just never quit. That type of it's kind of like the also like you said with the connections. It's kind of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing. You know? You have to make sure you know somebody who might know somebody who might know somebody. Mm-hmm. So what are the biggest challenges you faced when you brought a book to a store or to a? Do you approach like larger chains first, or have you gone to like mom and pop bookstores and such?
Absolutely, mom and pops first.
Mom and pops first.
Like a chain, especially if they're attached to. A you know a corporate entity that's you know is the mother company of that company. Like you can't walk into a you know the corporate bookstore and be like, "Would you carry my book?" Some may. I've never found it, but you know, comic book stores are mostly run by the one dude behind the counter. You know, and so if you walked in and say, "Do you have a local creators section or a indie book section?" Like generally, they're willing to you know put your book up and see what happens. So I've never, I mean, if you go face to face with somebody and you bring in your book and it's quality, and that's the thing is like we've been honing our craft for years, and we didn't put out books because we thought that you know we don't have the quality to for people to want to read it.
It's like. This is my story. I want to make sure it's out there.
Right.
There's that compelling want to make your voice known. To leave that mark, to let somebody read through it, go through it and say, "I liked this story," or "This story had some type of profound effect on me." Do you ever get any feedback like that? Like, when it comes to feedback, how do you deal with overly positive feedback, and how do you deal with overly negative feedback? Think of it as a two-part question.
Right. That's really funny, because like, I was just having this conversation this morning that... we are puppies. We just got started in this, you know, like we're only a couple years old. And if some veteran out there that is, you know, been in the business for 20 years wants to come up and like, I had an editor for a major, comic company actually say that, you know, like this is a really great comic if I were to run out of toilet paper. And I was like, "Oh, wow, that is really harsh." But he is a veteran. I mean, like, for me to completely dismiss what this man has to say and be like, "Well, he's just a jerk," or whatever, I mean, you're missing the point. I mean, like, art is an evolution of things. Like, and if you want to get better and you want to reach a certain echelon in the business, you have to be willing to take a critique or take criticism. And take it with a grain of salt, and probably put a smile on your face when you do it. Because if you, you know, if you get all your feelings hurt, and you throw a tantrum, and you tell the person that you don't know what you're talking about, and blah, 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 then, you know, you're missing the point. You're off the plot. You need to get back, you know, to, you know, a humble place, and look at yourself like, "Yeah, I've got room for improvement." The flip side of that question is, you know, I'm always really humbled, and really... flattered by people who were like, I read your book, it was amazing, it's so fun. You know, like, I just talked to a guy here at the hotel, and he was like, I just bought your book, it's amazing, Von Gool is great. I mean, that's the first thing is like, Von Gool was great. And then we get, you know, all this other stuff, you know, it's like, and then this, and the things they like.
Well, if you like this, you know, exactly. That type of thing, yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, as a creator, it's, you know, it's the thing that keeps you going. It's like, there's that one guy out there that likes my book, and I'm going to do the book just for that guy, you know. But, you know, from a businessman's perspective, like, I do have to take all the bad criticism and say, you know what, how can we make this better? How can we appeal to more people? And so, like, yeah, I mean, anytime someone tells me something negative, I'm going to take it in, and I'm going to say, all right, how can we improve off of what that guy said? Certainly, you want to do your book for yourself, and, like, at the end of the day, you're the one that has to approve it. You're the one that has to, you know, say, you know, this is as good as I got, and this is, I'm happy with this, and I'm proud of this book. And, like, I would hope that anybody who's doing their own book wouldn't, if they weren't 100% proud of what they were doing, I hope they would go back to the drawing board and do something better. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you're really proud of yourself and you've accomplished something with putting a book together, then yeah, you know, that's what you're there for. That's who the book is for. It's for you. And if you find an audience through your own means, then that's the best thing that could happen to a creator. But, you know, there are those dudes out there that, or ladies, that don't like what you're doing, and you have to look at it and say, is this the person who's going to give me the most honest critique? And are they just not into what I'm doing?
It's kind of like you have to deal with the Anton Egos of the world if you want to, like, take the whole critic thing from, like, Ratatouille to heart, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You've seen that movie, right?
I have kids.
Oh, yes.
I've seen every Pixar movie a million times.
Excellent, excellent. Well, going back to promotion and such, I noticed that, like, you seem to have started with print first and then mostly a web presence.
Yeah, actually, I started, well, we got the book done, and then we went to print, and they're like, okay, how do we, and we were just going to do conventions, like, that was our whole thing, and then I started thinking, and then everyone's like, why don't you have a website? I was like, well, it's just, I like the convention atmosphere, I like going and meeting the people, and, I mean, like, we have a section in the back, like, if you buy our book, we'll do a sketch for you, con sketch for you. For free. That's the least we can do because you're good enough to patronize us. And then, so I like that atmosphere. But I think that with our web presence, you know, we have the Facebook and the Twitter and all the social media. And I have a really great web designer, and he's super patient with me because I constantly am evolving my notion of what I want the website to look like and how I want to reach my audience and how I want to engage with new participants. So, I think, yes, we do have a web presence, but, you know, it'll be stronger once I'm able to nail down what I want.
Yeah, kind of like how I've noticed a lot of comics will be web comics first. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of stuff, like, there's the whole thing with Keenspot and Keenspace, and a lot of stuff sprung out of that, where they'd have a web presence first, and then they'd go into books later on, publishing that after building up a fan base on the website, and you seem to have gone for the book, and then you're working on that. Is there going to be?
We did it completely opposite. Yeah. Like, we wanted to put our book out. We wanted, like, you know, we wanted to feel it in our hands and flip through the pages. We want the comic book, and I'm actually developing a web comic right now for the website. You know.
Would you be interested, or in the future, are you guys going to be branching off to making some of the comics available on the website, like, say, in e-reader format?
Absolutely. Actually, that's our next step. I think we wanted to get up a little bit of an inventory, like, kind of get an understanding of where the characters are going and what we're doing with them. We're also breaking out the short stories into longer format, like typical standard books. And so once those start going, we're definitely going to put those in a digital format. So, you know, at a reduced price, you can get the PDFs or whatever, and we'll ship them, we'll email those off to you. And then if you want to come to the conventions and meet us and get a drawing from us and then buy the physical book, we can do that too. And I think as far as, you know, then we'll do, like, once we get a story arc completed, then we'll go ahead and, you know, put the trade paper back together, and then you can buy the whole compilation. But yeah, for right now, we're, you know, like I said, we're puppies. We're new with this game. So, like, we saw how everyone else was doing it, and, you know, a lot of people I'm really, I admire, like, Kevin Gentilcore's Teenage Love Zombies. Really amazing book. Totally fun story. And he does, and he, that's kind of the model that I kind of, I went after. It was like, he did his weekly web book. Like, you got a page a week or something like that. And then he put out, you know, the compilation of the year or something. And I was like, wow, it's amazing. Like, how cool. And because I got the book first, and I was like, that's great. And he goes, yeah, this is my web comic. I'm like, you can get this on the web? So, I mean, yes. I mean, like I said, like I'm really old school. I'm, you know, I'm pen and nib guy. You know, like, I'm just, I want to get the analog version understood, understand how we can interface with our readers, and then move on to the web. And so, I mean, like, yeah, I'm doing it a little bit backwards, but there's no wrong way to peel a banana, as I like to say.
Well, there could be. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Somebody hasn't invented a wrong way to peel a banana yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we'll leave that for Antarctic Press. No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
they're nice people, I suppose. Anyways,
I've got to meet these people.
I think they do Gold Digger and a couple other comics. But yeah.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, just you've mentioned Antarctic more than you've mentioned my company.
Oh, sorry.
So
sorry.
Who is this a plug for?
Oh,
I'm just playing. I'm giving you a time.
Okay. Actually, it's just like they're the only other like comic stuff we've dealt with at one point. So it's kind of like this is most of the time we're interviewing voice actors or voice actresses or video game companies. So I'm like, what do you guys look for when you're going into printing, like to get when you're looking for a printer and such? What are you looking for when you're doing that? Like when you go to take these to print, what are you looking for in a printer?
Do you mind if I plug my printer?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I go through Rink. It's Rink Printing, and I don't know. Like I was looking for a good price break. Like, because I mean, it's numbers of copies versus how much each copy is. So I mean, like, if you get a ton of copies, you get a really cheap price. And I didn't want to do a big run because I didn't know how well we're gonna do. But Rink is, and I'm sorry, I'm spacing out her name. The lady who always helps me out, she literally walked us through step by step what we need to do and how it's gonna work. And when we printed our first book, our second book wasn't as hands-on, but the first book, she knew I was really stressed out and I didn't know what I was doing. And so I think she emailed me or called me at every step of the printing process. Like, and I was like, wow. Like, the customer service alone, I will never go anywhere else. I don't care if they charge me twice as much as they're charging me per book. It's worth it to me to know that someone on the other end of the line knows me by name, and if I called and I said, hey, this is Andy Mark, oh, hey, how you doing, Legacy? What do you need today? You know, it's like, that's what's important to me. Like, if I can call a bigger company that does strictly comic books, and that's all they did, you know, they had a super cheap price, but when I call them and they don't even know my name, like, I'm not going to want to deal with them. Rink has walked me through and has held my hand and has kept me from pulling my hair out throughout this whole entire process. I cannot say enough good things about them. We put an ad for them in our first book, and if there's any first timer out there and they don't know how to put their book together, like what it means for the printer, I highly recommend them, because they've just done, like, literally they did all the work for me. They did all the heavy lifting for me. Like, I just sent them my PDFs, like, what do I do? And they're like, here's what you gotta do. Slow down, we'll help you out. So I mean, yeah, I mean, I was just lucky. I was fortunate. It goes back to Kevin Gentilcore's Teenage Love Zombies. I loved how his book came out, and I said, who do you go through? And he tells me, he goes, go to Rink. That's the only place you need to go. And I was like, oh, well, all right, Kevin, I'll trust you this time. Like, I'm at a pinch.
Like, well, yeah.
Right. Well, we were backed up against the Denver Comic Con, because like, we had to get our book out by then, because I had assured them, I was like, I'm a Denver creator. I want to, you know, launch it at your show. You know, I loosely was associated with them. It was really important to me that I put my book out as a Denver creator at the first Denver Comic Con. That was really important to me. And so It came down to, like, we were finishing up Colors, like, the last, oh, like, 2 weeks before the show.
Oh, man. And so I was just like, really getting it close.
And I called Rink, and I was like, what can you do? And they said, we'll do everything you need. And I said, okay, good. And then, like, you know, like, a couple days before the show, like, get this big box, and it was like, my first comic is right there.
Oh,
it's like,
so,
wow.
Now, let's go back to your first comic. What comics did you read growing up? What were your favorites?
Oh, man, you know, I was a big Marvel guy. Like, that was my thing. I think growing up, it was like Captain America and the X-Men and the Avengers and stuff like that. And then, and then Dark Horse kind of popped up. And I was like, they're doing a lot of different stuff. And then, like, they kind of made a name for themselves, like, doing licensed properties and things like that. And then the big Image thing hit. And I was like, I would follow artists more than I would follow, like, books.
So it's like, other than publishers, it's more like, if you don't look at stuff like IDW or Dark Horse, you look at, oh, that's the people who do Witchblade, or that's the people who do Spawn.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I was growing up, it'd be like, that's John Romita Jr., and like, yeah. What is he doing? He was strictly Marvel, but I mean, like, I would bounce from X-Men to Spider-Man to whatever he was doing. And then, like, Jim Lee, of course, is a big, and I think all the Image guys, when they left Marvel, that was a big thing. Yeah. It was like whatever they're gonna do next is gonna be hot, so I want to be on that. So Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, Silvestri, Valentino, and Will Spataccio, like, all those guys, I picked up all of their books. But I think I find that, like, I think always I was kind of leaning towards the off-brand comic, like, the one that just didn't fit in, like, the rest of the continuity of, like you have the Avengers, and, like, all of Marvel comics could fit into a certain category. Like, it was the Avengers, Fantastic Four, the X-Men, and it would be, like, the off-brand, like, Rom, the Space Knight. Like, what is he doing over there? Like, what is, like, he is not associated with anything. What's going on with that? And so, like, through reading comics, that was, like, the thing that I wanted. Like Jason Pearson's Body Bags. I love that story because it had no continuity with anything else. Like, Hellboy is kind of another one of those things. Like, he didn't fit in with anything. Like, I think I like those odd
texts. So you're the person who's like, well, everyone else is reading Justice League, I'm going to read Doom Patrol.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's like, it's, I know what Superman's going to do in this issue. I know he's going to save Lois Lane. I know he's going to, you know, save Metropolis or whatever it is. Like, I want to know what the other guys are doing. Like, Blue Beetle's always a fun book.
Oh, those are, man, he got totally destroyed during the whole Doomsday thing.
Right, right.
Story arc. But yeah.
I pull that book out at least once a month and just read that one section where Blue Beetle gets it. So I was like, it's like, and then after that, I'm like, huh. But
I thought Superman, the whole Death of Superman thing was great until they brought him back. And I was just like, oh. You know, they're like, oh, there's four of them now. It's kind of like that whole thing when they cloned Spider-Man. They're like, well, is he the clone?
I don't know. Like,
Crimson Spider-Bit.
I have this argument at least once a week about Superman being like an archaic superhero. Like, he needs to be pushed off to the pasture or whatever. But, I don't think, like, cloning Spider-Man and killing Superman are two totally different things in my mind.
I think they're both kind of the same thing, where there's the shark and here's the Fonz and the motorcycle.
Right, right. Oh, DC to do? I mean, like, how could you
reboot them?
You had to do something. Well, I mean, John Byrne did that already. I mean, like, how many times can you reboot a guy in a decade?
I don't know. We'll see with Spider-Man, right?
Right, exactly. And you know what? I am a big proponent of the big companies doing drastic things to shake up the industry. I mean, to shake up what they're doing. I mean, like, you know, it's so easy to get static and just tell the same story about, you know, Lois Lane or Gwen Stacy being kidnapped or whatever the thing is. But it's so easy to get stuck in a rut for a big company. Like, we have our characters. They've been around for 60 years. They write themselves at this point. So if you want to switch everything up and do new 52, go for it. You know what? For a big company like that, that's pretty ballsy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to take... You got to do something. And if... I mean, and I don't... I, for... I have a hard time believing that it's just for sales or it's just for, you know, to get media attention. I think at the core of the editorial staff, you know, at a big company like that, like, they really want to make their leave their stamp on comic books. Like, what did we do? We made the new 52. Awesome. We did that. You know, like, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm taking ownership of that.
It's the person who's like, we were behind Amalgam, that type of thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, why? Well, good. You know, so hopefully, you know, like, you have to roll the dice as, you know, as a creator, as an artist, as especially as the from the business end of making comics, you have to roll the dice. You have to, you know, throw the, you know, caution to the wind and the chips fall where they may. And hopefully on the other end, you know, you have a really great story and you have something that the fans can appreciate. You know, and then sometimes you get the Clone Saga. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, like, you don't, but when you're in the, when you're in the meeting with everybody, you got writers and artists and editors, and you're like, let's do this. Oh, that's a good idea. Let's do this. And in your head, it all sounds really good. But then when it gets down to paper, and then, like, the, if it's not accepted from the readers, like, yeah, but I put all of my heart and soul into that story. And I'm sorry if you didn't like it, but I tried. I'd much rather do a crazy story where you mix everything up and, you know, come out on the other end and, you know, fix everything, rather than just doing the same old, you know, purse-snatching story, or how many times is Lex Luthor going to create a death ray, or whatever the story is. It's just static, and it's boring. I mean, it sounds like comic book readers more today would much rather you just stick with the status quo rather than mix everything up. And if you futz with their character too much, like, they get really offended. Like, what are you doing to my favorite character?
It's like, what have you done to Spider-Man? He's now short and, oh, what?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, Spider-Man's always been short. That's his gag.
You know what I'm talking about with the new changes that they
right.
put to, yeah.
Right.
But, yeah. So, going back to, like, the, do you feel that the content in the comic book should be made or tailored more toward the creator or toward the audience?
For independent guys?
When you're sitting there working on something or editing it, do you find that, like, well, maybe this should be changed a little bit to match more what the audience might want over what the creator might want? Do you ever get
no,
that?
No, absolutely not. I think
creator
that,
first.
I think that you tell the story you want to tell. I think that if you can't get mired down in what the audience is going to think. As a creator, you create what comes out of your heart and soul and all of your elbow grease and hard work. That's what you do. You create the thing that was in your head. Like, you have this idea in your head, like, I've got this story about this guy that's going to do this thing. It's going to be awesome. And then you put it on paper, and you find the audience. The audience will find you. You know, like, that's the thing is if you start worrying about what everyone's going to, you're never going to get anything done. If you start, you know, like, tailoring your story, you're just going to turn out to be another Marvel or DC. And that's not what you want. Like, as an independent creator, like, you have to tell the stories that are bold and different and bigger than yourself, because you're competing with gigantic companies like Disney and Marvel and this and that, Warner Brothers. So you have to be bigger and more dynamic and tell that from your heart and soul. And then, I think if you're honest about the story and you put genuine effort into it, then certainly the audience will come to you. Like, it's the field of dreams situation. Like, if you build it, they'll come. I mean, the hardest part is putting it down. Like, the hardest point is if you can get over yourself and know that not everyone's going to love your story. Like, nobody likes superheroes anymore. Like, everyone's bags on superheroes, and that's my bread and butter. I love doing superhero stories, and it just so happens that Legacy doesn't have any superheroes. We don't have any spandex-clad boots and capes type of guys, but we're working on that. And hopefully, like, the way I do a superhero, the audience will come and say, yeah, you did it all right. I like what you did. So, and that's what I'm worried about, is being honest to myself, my integrity. Did I do this for myself, or did I do this for somebody else?
And going back to that, back to kind of a slightly different slant on that same point, when it comes to, like, when the stories that you're telling, if they get more grim or dire, or there's content issues there, since you mentioned that you do have kids, Do you ever, when you're working on something or editing something, say, do I want my kids reading this? Or at what age would it be okay for my kids to read what I've created?
We have a big disclaimer on the front of our covers that says mm-hmm. mature readers only.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever were to scale that back, first of all, I'm working with other creators. And if this is the story that they feel they want to put their name on, then fine. Like, I mean, sometimes they get graphic and sometimes they get violent. Sometimes we use a little bit of harsh language. But I'm not here to tell you what story you're going to do. I'm here to tell you if the storytelling works. I'm here to package it, and I'm here to market it for you. Would I let my kids read Legacy? Probably not.
Not yet.
I mean, like, my kids are real, real young still, so I'll cross that bridge when they come to it. Like my kids are so unaffected by the things that I do. Like, I mean, they're, I mean...
It's kind of like, oh...
Yeah, it's like
Iron Man killed somebody else in that movie.
Right. It's like, look, Daddy works real hard on this comic, and they look at him like, yeah, whatever. You know, like, okay. Yes, that's one of the like, I guess I'm
you're not old enough to appreciate it yet.
Right. Like, I'm drawing comics for my kids. You know, like I want to have like that. Like, what does your daddy do like at show and tell? Like, my dad draws comics. Like, my dad doodles or whatever. I don't know what they tell their teachers, but the point is this is like no. Like, we don't have a kid audience. We don't want a kid audience. We want dudes that are our age or ladies that are our age that, you know, can handle a little bit of, you know, a little bit of blood and a little bit of, you know, harsh language. That's, I mean, and it's not even like we're thinking about that. We're not even thinking about what you like or what she likes or what those people like. We're going to tell the story that we think that is in our head that we have to tell. I mean, like, that's the thing about creators that a lot of people don't understand is that the story is stuck in there and it plays over and over and over in your head like it's stuck on, like, one of those old film reels. And you're like, I got to get this out. And literally, I'll draw a comic and then I'll go to sleep and I'll dream about the next page because it's just right there. It's subcutaneous. It just sits there on top of your brain and says, draw me, draw me, draw me. I need to be told. And maybe if it comes out, like, maybe it's not great. Maybe it's Liz too graphic or too violent or there's too many curse words. But that was a story that was available to me at the time. And we haven't had any blowback yet of anybody not liking what we're doing. So I think we'll keep doing what we're doing. I think there's a certain point. We've all talked about it. The Legacy group have talked, like, what is too much? And, there are some creators that, you know, that want to have their own, like, ethics or morals that they adhere to, and I have my set, and if I think that, editorially speaking, if it does not serve the story, then I'll pull it back, and we'll rework it. But as far as I'm concerned, the creators have free reign to do whatever they want until, you know, I get to a point where we have to, you know, kind of sit down and have a meeting. And it's a democracy. I mean, we're all going to sit down and talk about it. How do you feel about this? Or how do you feel about that? And, you know, at the end of the day, hopefully it all works out.
So, in your editorial position, what do you do when somebody in the team just suddenly, like, they hit a part where they wake up the next morning and they don't have the next page? Or they hit, like, a writer's block or they're having trouble getting their work to you? How do you handle that as the editor?
We sit down, and usually I'll take him out for a beer, and I'm like, what's the problem? Like, what's going on in your life? Because it's never, the story's always going to be there. It's the periphery problems in your life. The bills have to get paid, the you know, fender bender your wife got into in the parking lot, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So it's always these things, you know. It's, if you can talk somebody through, you know, their personal life, then generally, their storytelling is going to come back. Like, you know, shake it off, you know. But when you have to actually sit down and talk about story, my trick is this. And I don't know, I always tell everybody this, but everyone tells me I'm wrong. So maybe I'm not doing the right thing, but I always find the end first. The sentence that happens before it says, and then they lived happily ever after. where is that? What is that? Where are we going? How do we get there? And where did you leave off at? Like, Bill's walking down the street and he goes down a darkened alley, and that's where you stop?
Okay, or whatever it is. The end at the darkened
exactly.
alley.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, how do we get to, and then live happily ever after? So, if I mean, it's deconstructing the story. It's reverse engineering your story. So you work backwards to where you were, and then, you know, you put it all together at that point. I mean, that's how I work, but, you know, some writers are different.
So why are you guys called Legacy Action Comics? I know the action part, but why the legacy part?
Legacy is a really strange thing. Me and Jack were sitting in my room reading comics, and I was talking about, you know, how cool, like, the idea of, you know, putting in a body of work into a comic book. Like, you put years and years and years into this book, and then when you walk away from it, no matter what anybody says or does, you still got that piece of work. You did. Like, no one can take that away from you. No one can take, you know, John Romita's work away or Jack Kirby's work away. Like, they left their footprint. And, you know, artists that did less pages, maybe, but still left huge footprints in the comic book industry. I'm like, man, I said, that's what I want. And this is like me when I was like 17 or 18 in high school, and I was thinking, that's what I want more than anything.
A legacy.
I don't care about money or fame or being a name. I want to leave a legacy so that, you know, when I leave this world, hopefully a long, long time from now.
Yeah.
But I want my kids to pick up my books and be like, this is the legacy. Like, he's a storyteller. He left all these stories for us. And I looked at Jack and I said, I just want to leave a legacy. He goes, well, that's what it is, dude. We gotta do legacy comics. And I was like, that's all right. And then I think Nick Millar threw in the action. I don't remember where that came from, but it's always been Legacy Action Comics for, you know, 15 years.
15 years?
Yeah. That's how long we've all been friends. We've been kicking
it around. And then, like, you got your first published stuff over at Denver Comic Con.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was last year, so we got our first book out last year. And then,
what was that like?
The Comic Con?
Yeah. Well, first things first, what do you think of Anime Land Wasabi so far?
I think it's incredible. Like, I was invited here, and I didn't know exactly what I was walking into. I knew it was, you know, clearly it's going to be anime and video games and stuff. And I thought it'd be about 12 or 13, you know, 13-year-old kids wandering around, maybe in costume, you know, looking for, you know, some place to play their video games. And they have exceeded my expectations, like, 1,000-fold. There's so many people here. Everybody's having a good time. The line is out around the corner, but we just walked through it, and it was...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's just so many people here, and there's so many cool, different, weird, interesting people in the dealer room. Like, there's, you know, jewelry makers and clothing makers and publishers and all these... I mean, it's this really cool mishmash of the culture. And, like, I'm really glad to be invited into it, because it'd probably be one of those environments where the legacy would stay away from, because it's not really our bag, but, you know, we're kind of like, you know, being christened into something really interesting here.
It's a little bit different from stuff like Denver Comic Con or Starfest or so.
Absolutely. Comic Fest and Denver Comic Con, very traditional, standard American comics, you know, like, more of our audience we'd reach. Like, and then, you know, I think it's weird, really weird, that how people segregate. Like, it's just in our nature to segregate or compartmentalize things. Like, this is anime and that's not. But I mean, if you look at, like, an anime character, I can't think of any off the top of my head, and then, like, parse them up against Superman. Like, we all have the same powers. We're all trying to fight evil, and it's all the same thing. So, like, why are we all separated? Like, I mean, I wish there was more of an anime presence in Denver Comic Con and maybe Comic Fest, and I wish there was more of an American, you know, comic book feeling here. So, I just think about that all the time. It's like, there's video game dudes or a video game community, and then there's comic book community, and then there's, you know, anime is a totally different segregation
and
of
from like traditional anime.
Traditional anime, yeah.
What do you feel that the appeal between these would be? Why do you think people segregate them, or be like, "Well, I like Japanese comics more than American comics," that type of thing? Why do you think people tend to do that?
I have no idea. Like, I don't know. I mean, like, look at my DVD shelf. You have all the comic book movies, Iron Man and Batman, all that. And then you got, you know, Blood is in there, and Street Fighter's in there, and Cowboy Bebop. I mean, like, some of the more mainstream-er names. But still, I mean, Vampire Hunter D is kind of like one of the big ones that I always followed. And then,
Is Van Gogh kind of Vampire Hunter D inspired? Just a little?
You know what? I don't know if Nick has ever seen Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, no.
Like, and I will honestly, if I think that if I had to pull inspiration, he'd probably be like the Grey Ghost and Hellboy. If he had could put those together, I don't think that, like, maybe he has seen Vampire Hunter D. I haven't talked to him about it, but like, it's very funny that you should say that, because I think, and I don't want to do any spoilers, but if you are a fan of Vampire Hunter D, then you are going to like where Von Gould's going. Like, he kind of laid it out for me. I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome. So
pretty excited about it, huh?
Absolutely.
So, what titles coming up are you most excited about? Let's plug some stuff.
Well, like I said, we're separating all the short stories and doing our big time, our straight formats. Texas the Kid is sci-fi western, and I work with the writers on that, and they're doing a gigantic story arc where planets might die. So, I mean, I'm like, wow, how are we going to get there? Goey is a pinnacle character in a much larger story that may determine heaven and hell as a reality. And then that's our thing, is like doing big stories, bigger than life stories. We're gonna keep Silver the Gorilla in a the short serialized format, but the thing that I'm most excited about is our webcomic, and it's gonna be called Bug, and it's about your traditional high school loser nerd that accidentally ends up with superpowers. So I'm really excited about getting started on that.
So working on the costume designs and stuff for that already, huh?
Oh man. And I'm pouring over it too. Like, I just can't seem to get the right look that I want. The story's there. It's gonna be huge. It's gonna be in very sci-fi. He's not gonna be like imbued with powers from beyond. It's gonna be very scientific and sci-fi. So yeah, it's gonna be super fun. And then, you know, creating a really great protagonist that has a seeped history in our American history and the military-industrial complex. So, I mean, yeah, we're building up all these little things that, you know, hopefully that, you know, like, I can keep track of all of the, you know, if we're doing a webcomic weekly, then, you know, hopefully the readers will keep coming back every week. And that's my big thing, is, like, you know, making every page exciting so that the next week you want to know what's going on.
It's like, so get the audience, get the cash, get the audience, get that type of thing. Right,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, so going back just a little bit more, what do you expect to see after launch of Bug and after the relaunches, or rather the splitting of these different franchises? Where do you see Legacy Action Comics, say, 5 years from now?
You know, I don't know. That's a really interesting question. I haven't thought about it. All of my creators are for sale. And that means that I want them to... I would like for them to get picked up by a big company that pays them lots of money and lets them do their own thing with cool characters and stuff like that. That's what I want. I mean, like, everyone is for sale. Everyone at Legacy is for sale. If you got a job for my writers or my artists, please take them and use them and abuse them and give them lots of money. Like, Legacy is still going to be here. I think it's my pet project, the thing that I love the most in the world, other than my children, the thing that I do. I think that, you know, I would like to say that in 5 years, and this might downplay it some, or I really hope that in 5 years I'm still doing this. I'm still writing my own stories and drawing my own stories, and I'm still going to conventions, and I'm still bringing in new talent to tell their stories and to help them and to mold and shape and, you know, create cool environments and stories. I think that's what I like the most. I like being involved with all the stories and trying to help them out. So I mean, like, the more creators that I can bring into the fold, you know, and then they go off and do bigger and better things. So, like, I like being like the way station for talent, you know, finding really exceptional people and kind of helping them along and then sending them on their way. And, like, you know, I mean, this is America. We're all capitalists. I mean, if I can make turn a nickel on it, then I'll be happy with that. But I mean, like, right now I pay out of pocket for everything that I do, and like, I love doing it. So I mean, like, if that never changes, then I'm still gonna be happy. Like, I really do love making Legacy Action Comics, and I hope that, you know, somebody out there reads it and says, I want to do this when I grow up. I want to work at Legacy. I want to submit something. Like, that's the thing, is like, we're open to submissions. We're like, if you have a story to tell and you can fit it into like our format, or if we can fit it into our short story book, yeah, send it to me. Like, you know, find me on Facebook or find me on Twitter and hit me up and let's talk about it. And like, I'll bring in a new person, and then, you know, one of the like Nick's about to explode. I have this feeling that the guy who does Von Ghoul is just gonna blow up and he's gonna get snatched up, and I'm gonna have a big hole in my lineup. And what are we gonna do?
We gotta find somebody else.
Exactly, exactly.
It's like once the other bird has left the nest, you go plant some more eggs.
Exactly.
Lay some more eggs.
Yeah, we'll plant
some more eggs. Yeah. That's how chickens work. You just plant them. Happens. They grow on trees.
let's hope that that's not true. I've never been to a farm. I don't know. That might frighten me.
Chicken trees.
That's Ooh. The most frightening thing I've heard all day.
Well, congratulations.
And I'm at Wasabi, so.
Oh, goodness, yeah. So, like, there's all sorts of people here with all sorts of neat costumes and lots of energy there. Even though right now a lot of it's been kind of like standing in line,
mm-hmm.
There is a lot of energy at these conventions.
Like, I didn't stand in line, just so you know. Yeah, I didn't.
Neither did we. It's like, yes. But, yeah, I've noticed this also at conventions like Denver Comic Con as well. There's a lot of energy that the people that attend these get. There's that energy that they bring in from being around people who are like the same things they do and who love this art, this mm-hmm. art form. And then when they leave those conventions, a lot of them tend to just clam up in their everyday lives. They just seem to compartmentalization. They tend to become more introverted. They tend to become a little bit less bold.
Like flowers close up at sunset.
Like they go to conventions and they're just in full bloom. They're just everywhere. They're excited. They really work well with other people. Then when they leave, they get to become a little bit more. They shy away from there. So what would advice?
I mean, come
would
on,
you
mate.
Give them?
You can't show up dressed up like Pokemon at your job or anything. I think it's important for if you're into something, if that's your deal. Like cosplay or video games, like Google that, man. Like, I mean, like, there's groups out there that are just like you. There's thousands. Like, everyone thinks like no one understands me. I'm all alone in this sea of loneliness. No, there's
the lonely sea of loneliness.
The lonely sea of loneliness.
Yes.
Like, there's so many people out there that are into like making models or painting action figures or whatever your thing is. Like, you're going to find people out there that's going to be... And so if you're clamming up and if you're introverting yourself, that's on you, man. Like, you need to be a little more bold. People...
They need to go make their own... get together their own legacy group.
Absolutely.
Get their friends and get... It's like, if they love this stuff, they, like you said, they need to live it 24/7.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
If this is what you're... If this is... Like, if you've tried playing baseball or bowling or whatever you're... And society tells you that you should be into playing golf. In my age, all my friends are like, we should go play golf. And I'm thinking, I should draw comics. Like, you go play golf, all you guys, and have fun. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, if you want to turn wrenches, you want to rebuild cars or whatever, there's groups out there that's all they do, man. Like, they know every in and out of every 64 Camaro that's ever been built in America. And, you know, like, you have to... You have to be accepting of other people's ideas of what is your hobby or whatever it is. But the thing is if you go back into your room and close your door and turn off the lights and just sit by the glow of your computer all night, like, yeah, you're going to rot your brain out. You need to get out and get some fresh air, and you need to meet other people and find out why they like the thing that you like, and, you know, like, yeah, create your own group. Yeah, and that's the other thing. If you go out into the internet and you can't find the people that are into what you're into, you start it. You go do it. You say, hi, my name's Bill, and I like this thing. I like knitting American flag replicas or whatever it is, you know, like, whatever your thing is, like, be like, this is what I do. It's the field of dreams, man. Someone's going to find you and be like, I like doing that. Let's be friends and do that together. And they're going to be like, okay, because you seem like cool and you like to do the things that I like to do. And, you know, you shower regularly and I'm happy about that. So, you know what I mean? It's like if you can't find your own kind, be a beacon of light for other people like you. Like, and that's ridiculous that people, like, I just don't understand, like, I don't understand introverts, for starters. I don't understand people who are, like, sad about their station in life. Like, you know, like, be excited about, like, the thing. What are you into? Yeah. What are you into? What's your thing?
Oh, our thing, actually, is we run, like, a retail store that deals with animation and comic books.
Uh-huh.
And also, we do a podcast. I do a lot with handhelds, and that's what I do. That's what we go out and do. We live at 24/7.
24/7, don't you?
Exactly,
yeah. Everybody you meet.
We look for that particular question is one we always ask at these interviews because there's so many different answers we've gotten for it, too. I like to make sure that when I'm giving an interview or so, that I find interesting or challenging questions. And I hope that these have been
absolutely. Like, yeah, I mean, I was, you know, a few curveballs in there.
It's like, whew, no.
But, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, you live it, and people find you, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is what I'm into. This is what I love.
The very few days we're closed out of the year, we are at anime conventions, or it's Christmas or Thanksgiving Day.
I would work Christmas or Thanksgiving Day if I could. Just another work day.
Right, exactly. That's the way I am. Like, I'm not a holiday guy. So, I mean, if I could sit at my drawing table and not go to the family dinners or whatever, like, I've tasted turkey before.
Yeah.
It tastes the same last year, you know? So, like, yeah, and I'm exactly the same. Like, I think that if you want to be successful, and we're not talking about success and failure necessarily, like, if you are into something and you're alone, please go find somebody. Because, like, sucking with somebody else is so much cooler than sucking by yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I may not be the best comic book artist. I may tell a horrible story. But I'm with my best friends, and I've known them forever. And, like, all the new people that are being involved, like, I'm excited to be around them. And every day is a laugh riot. You know, like,
it's kind of like you're paddling, you hear banjos, but at least you're not paddling alone.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly the whole thing is, like, you know, it's just, I don't know, maybe there's some people out there that just don't want to be around people. And if they don't want to be around people, they're sure as heck not going to be here because there's tons of people at Wasabi today. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not here to cure everyone's ails or anything, but, you know, I mean, sometimes I would like to grab a kid, you know, by their scruff of their shirt and shake them and be like, what's wrong with you? Go make friends, you know? You know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, like, there are people like that in my life that are just, you know, no matter how much you try to engage them, they shut down. You know, it's like those things in the ocean, like the little... the little animals, the little plants.
Like you swim by. Urchins or something like that. The little anemones.
Yeah, and then they suck back in. Yeah, yeah. It's like when you try to be friends with people, they do that. And, you know, that's fine too. I mean, like, life's not for everybody, I guess. You know, like, sometimes, no matter how much you try or how much you try to engage somebody or try to pull them out of their shell, like, their shell is their comfort zone. That's where they want to be. Leave them alone. Let them do their own thing, you know? Like, if they're happy, you know, they're not hurting anybody, they're not bothering anybody. Let them do whatever they want to do. I just hope that what they want to do is buy Legacy Action Comics. That's my thing.
Yes, yes. Because, like, it's important. That's absolutely.
Right?
Hey, real quick question. You're talking about, like, drawing and such. What tools do you use? Do you have a light box, that type of stuff? Do you...
I do have a light box. I don't... I am big on ink over pencil. And there's nothing... Nothing special. I have nothing special about my toolbox. It's just, you know, sometimes you use Sometimes they use pins. No. Sometimes they use... What is that?
He's a tracer.
No, that's no chasing age references.
No, I'm accepting the fact that I'm a tracer. I love tracing. I love inking. Like, that's my thing. The thing I love more than anything is inking. Like, pulling someone's pencils out and making it really shine, yeah. But I think the thing is that, you know, like, sometimes you have to use a pen. Sometimes you have to use, like, quill and nib. And sometimes you have to use a brush. I mean, it's like, it's all kind of standard issue comic book stuff. Something, anything you could read in a how-to book.
No favorites. Like, oh, this is this particular brand of kneading eraser is my favorite.
No, I mean, I think in anybody who's working in comics, especially in Denver area, is there's a Sakura, like, brush pen. It's just a refillable black pen. I mean, it's
just the standard equipment.
Yeah, I mean, it's the multi-tool thing. It's like it's the Swiss Army knife of like brush pins. Like, you know, you can use it for almost anything. You can get almost any technique out of it, and you know, works really good. So I mean, like light boxes, I'll use if I got to duplicate panels. Like if it's a static panel where the same thing happens in each one. I mean, that's an old school thing to do, but now you just do it in Photoshop. So. Like if someone was like, I have this pencil work, but I don't want you to ink it. I want you to, you know, like, then you pull out the light box and do stuff like that. But you know, all the guys that I work with, they're just like, just go ahead and do it.
I was like, yeah, just bring it into Photoshop. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, digital tools have just, you know, made everything so much easier. I mean, I'm such a, like, they call me a Luddite. I don't know exactly what that means.
Luddite is essentially someone who, doesn't adapt too well to new technology.
Yeah, that's me entirely. Like, I'm like, remember that old, like, the, what do you call it? The Star Trek?
Oh, yeah.
The where they go back to Earth, and they go back to the past to save the whales?
That's like 4, isn't it? Star Trek 4? Yes.
And, like, Scotty picks up the mouse, like, hello, computer. Like, that's how I feel when I, like, do something for me. Like, make pretty pictures. That's my thing with the... So, I mean, I'm really bad at technology, but I got my army of, you know, tech guys that help me out, put my training wheels on and walk me through it. But, yeah, I mean, it's the
support group that helps you get through there when you're sitting there trying to figure out, like, what do I do with this again?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, Jack's not great at inking, so, like, I pick up his heavy lifting on that, and, you know, like, Nate really likes how I tell stories, so I help him out with storytelling on that. And Tyler's a fantastic colorist, so he helps me out with that. He does all little tricks and things, so he, you know, helps me out with that. And, you know, Nate, Cozy is always real big. He's a writer for Texas. And so once I think I've got a real niche thing for Texas to do, oh, would this be cool if this happened? And he's like, this would be way cooler. I'm like, dang it, that is really cool. So, I mean, like, everyone helps each other out. I mean, if we have a weak point or weak chink in the armor or whatever, but, like, we definitely work to each other's...
advantages or
right.
To each other's, like, if there's occasionally small... Like, if somebody's not against... Somebody's weaknesses will be filled by another's strength.
Right.
Kind of like, it's a bond.
Absolutely.
Like a chain link fence. Legacy Action Comics is a chain link fence.
Yeah, we hold each other together.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Blue. It's the bond.
I like that metaphor. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
It's awesome.
No, that's really good. We're the chain link fence of comics.
There you go. Wrap that up, print it. There you go.
There you go. That's it. That's going to be printed on my desk when I get home.
The chain link fence of comics.
Legacy Action Comics.
So, before we go, is there anything you want?
What is she laughing at? What is so funny with her?
Oh, she watches a lot of these, and I guess our interviewing style is a little bit unique. Because, like, we'll sit there and we'll talk to voice actors about their kids or their theater experience over, like, oh, which character in Naruto did you like being the most?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that type of thing. But, yeah. Also, I think it's the energy that, like, I hear, our audience can't see it, but there's hand motions everywhere.
Right, right.
Which is great.
Yeah, jazz hands.
Yes. Nah, So going back to wait, before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to plug? With like, give us URLs, things you'd like to plug, all that.
I think for right now, I think if everybody just wants to find us on Facebook and follow us there, then you know, like exponentially, you'll figure out like we'll release the website and we'll you can find us on Twitter and stuff like that. Yes, I mean, Facebook is the jumping off point, and then like I'm pretty constant on that daily, you know, keeping everyone updated on what we're doing and how we're doing and what we're doing it with. So that's it, man. I mean, just come down to Wasabi this weekend. Come check us out. We're happy to talk to anybody and hang out. And if you have any questions about that, that's fine. This is probably not going to air this weekend, is it?
Probably not.
Probably not. So don't come down to Wasabi this weekend.
Oh, wait.
Whenever
we're going to try it, like, because I'm halfway through a last show that we did. And I was like, well, let's see. I could probably just attach this to that, and then the show will be 6 hours long. No problem.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love those. And for all of our listeners, you have to suffer through 6 hour long shows of me talking. You're welcome. Yes.
Everybody loves it.
All three of our audience.
Great.
It's a running joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. Yeah, this has been Philip Wesley, The Mile High Mouth, with Radio DMG, and I'm here at Anime Land Wasabi 2013 with
Andrew Mark with Legacy Action Comics.
And you should definitely check them out. They, like you said, check them out on Facebook. And read which should they start with first with? What comic would you suggest?
Just get Legacy Action number 1 to start off with. That kind of kicks off all the stories.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
It's really fun.
And that's the end of this episode of Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and we'll be back here at the same Radio DMG time, same Radio DMG channel, in a couple more days, with another interview from Anime Land Wasabi, and then maybe the first of our sauna coverage. So stay tight, stay loose, and all that other stuff. Also, we'll be covering Denver Comic Con this year, and it's going to be good. We'll see what type of interviews we can get in it. But for now, good night.